Lowe's knows you want to get even more value for the holiday. That's why as a MyLowe's Rewards member, you get new member deals on holiday decor, tools, and more. And you earn points when you shop. More points equal more rewards to help you save on holiday and more. Not a member? Join for free today at Lowe's.com/MyLowe's Rewards. Because Lowe's knows deals. Program subject to terms and conditions. Points are awarded on eligible purchases. See Lowe's.com/terms for full details. Subject to change.
In this birth story episode with Rachel, she shares openly about her journey and decision to get off of antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication before she got pregnant, as well as the challenges during her pregnancy and a birth that started with her water breaking in her backyard in front of all her friends at her baby shower. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 280. Whether it is your first time listening or you have been here before, you know I'm glad that you're spending some time with me today. In this episode, we have Rachel. Rachel lives in Omaha, Nebraska with her husband, their son, and their cat, Daisy. Rachel always wanted to be a mother, but before she could begin that journey, she felt as though she needed to confront and manage her history of depression, anxiety, and eating disorders. The tools she learned in therapy to cope with her depression and anxiety helped her come to terms with her son's birth experience, which was very different from the birth experience that she hoped for. Rachel's going to share about her long journey of getting off of antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication. She talks about how when she was pregnant, she had issues with intense back pain and insomnia. Her water broke at her diaper keg in her backyard in front of all of her friends, and that led to a birth that ended in a C-section under general anesthesia for a breech baby, and also included a surprise discovery about the shape of her uterus. So a lot going on here, folks. Rachel gets a bit emotional and teary during her story, and you can understand why. This was definitely a journey, and there's so much to learn from her story. I cannot wait for you to hear it. Now, quick question for you. Have you ever wanted to ask me something about pregnancy and birth? Well, if so, come join me in my next live birth plan class. At the end of every one of my birth plan classes, when I do it live, I do 30 minutes of office hours Q&A, and actually longer if people have more questions, where I answer any questions you have about pregnancy and birth. Doesn't have to be related to birth plan. It can literally be about anything. Folks ask some great questions, and it's the best opportunity you have to chat with me and get my thoughts on what's going on. So sign up for the next live birth plan class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. I usually do the class about once a month, so it'll happen in December, maybe 11th, I think is the date. Anyway, head to drnicolerankins.com/birth plan to sign up and grab your spot. All right, let's get into this birth story episode with Rachel. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for agreeing to come on to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you share your birth story today.
Thank you so much for having me on. This feels kind of like an out-of-body experience because I've been listening to you for so long. So yeah, this is really exciting.
Yeah. So why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, I am Rachel. I am born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. I live here with my husband and our 15-month son, 15-month-old son, Caspian, and our cat, Daisy. So they all keep me very busy.
I bet. Now, in order to understand what happens with the birth, then we have to talk a little bit about what happens during pregnancy, and in your case, even before pregnancy. So one of the things I appreciated when you wrote in, you talked about even before you got pregnant, you had to make the decision about getting off antidepressant and anti-anxiety medications. What was your thought process around that, and how did you come to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety in high school, and so I have been on medications since then. Different medications, if you're on a certain one for an extended amount of time, often you have to increase your dosage until you're at the max dosage, because your brain gets used to like the amount of medicine that you're on. And so then it is less effective. So at the point where I was kind of thinking about that in the future, it'll be a good time to start trying to have a baby and having a baby, I was talking to my psychiatrist about it. And he was like, well, so based off of the studies and what we know, it can be harmful or it can affect a fetus. If you were on antidepressants or anti-anxiety during that first trimester, it can affect their development. Okay. And so first trimester, he said, would be where it would most affect the baby. But then also once a baby's born, they can go through some withdrawals, which can be really difficult for the baby. So he also said there can be, it can affect the baby if the mom is on medicine, but it can also affect the baby if the mom is depressed and has, you know, uncontrolled anxiety. So he said, you know, best case scenario, you feel good, you're off of the medicine, baby feels good. But if we have to have you on some anti-anxiety or antidepressants, that'll be okay. Cause the, you know, you want to find a good balance there. So that, it can take a while to get off of antidepressants. Cause if you try to cut it out cold turkey, you can go through a lot of withdrawals. So that can feel, for me, that feels like, you know, that feeling when you like miss a step where you're walking down the stairs, you feel like you miss a step, that kind of like that little jolt. So that's how I experience withdrawals of, it would be every like 30 to 60 seconds. If I were to cut it out completely, it would feel like that. So it can, So what we had to do was, okay, so my husband wanted a summer baby like him. So then I was like, okay, so if we're going to try to have a baby in between, you know, like July and August, okay, so we have to do the math backwards of, okay, I need to get pregnant 9 months before then, but then it can take up to 3 months to slowly wean off of medicine. Gotcha. So we kind of had to like do extra plan, do all of this math.
Right.
But once I figured out the date of when to start weaning off, we'd slowly decreased the amount. So that was something that I set up with my psychiatrist. It helped writing down, okay, for this week, it's going to be this amount. And then I'm going to cut down to another amount after that. So just slowly being patient with myself.
Right.
That's kind of what we had to do for that.
So it sounds like your psychiatrist presented both options and you felt like, and would have supported you with both options.
Yes.
And you felt like for you and your family, the option, you preferred the option of trying to get off the medication. And then how did you feel as you weaned off the medication?
Yeah, it was definitely really difficult. Just with even going through those small steps, you could still feel withdrawals. And then, you know, you can kind of feel more emotional. Sometimes antidepressants mask your emotions.
Right.
And so just feeling more things with that, but just trying to be patient with myself.
Sure.
And right at the end, when I went from a small dosage to nothing, it was too much and I almost had a panic attack. So then I had to go at even smaller doses.
Okay.
You know, going through it, you just have to be patient with yourself.
Sure. And then how soon after you got off the medications did you get pregnant?
Just in about 2 months. So it was it was really fast. I used the ovulation, you know, test strips and everything.
Yep.
So that was really helpful for us.
Okay.
So it is funny, like it took a long time to get pregnant, uh-huh. but in a different way than for other people.
Yeah. So then in total, it was about 5 months then from when you started weaning yourself off the medication mm-hmm. to when you got pregnant.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So then when you got pregnant, then, well, I mean, we can get into this, but you know, I want to know like what your prenatal care was like, and then also what your mental health was like. So mm-hmm. why don't we start with your prenatal care? Did you see a physician or midwife? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, I had a physician, OB. So I chose her because she was really highly rated, and unfortunately her schedule didn't line up with the day of the week that I was able to go for my appointments. I had a day off. So I only saw her twice. I usually saw her nurse practitioner.
Okay.
And I wish that I had found somebody that was able to see me, the nurse practitioner and the physician.
Okay. Why is that?
I felt like I would have gotten more answers about what I was asking, mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know, then the nurse practitioner was able to give me. And then as we start talking about it more, I didn't feel like the physician kind of understood or recognized the pain that I was in.
Okay. And then, so let's talk about that. What kind of issues did you have with pain?
So during the first trimester, it was also with my,
No worries.
Yeah. Okay. With my mental health, I have a history of eating disorders as well. Okay. And so the first trimester was a little bit difficult because I was only able to eat certain things.
Sure.
So only be able to eat, you know, like ice cream or crackers, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing. That was difficult. And so I was, sorry.
No, take your time.
I told you. Yeah, I told you.
You did.
And then it also frustrates me when I tear up too, because I want to be able to share.
Yeah.
Okay. So during my first trimester, it was difficult only being able to eat like ice cream and crackers and things like that. Because mm-hmm. I was like, well, I want to be healthy. For my baby, sure. and just being patient with myself, that was a good exercise for me.
Gotcha.
You know, just being patient with myself. I was dehydrated in my first trimester, mm-hmm. so I had to have an IV of fluids.
Sure.
And I wasn't at the point where it was where you're super, super nauseous. I can't remember.
Yeah, like hyperemesis?
Yes. Uh-huh. A nurse did put that on my chart, and then they left it on, even though I only threw up a few times. It was just constantly nauseous. So
got it.
Unfortunately, they left that on there. I did have, right from the beginning, insomnia. Just wild insomnia. Maybe 3-4 hours of sleep a night.
Oh, goodness.
If that.
Okay.
Which triggered my migraines. Uh-huh. Usually I have an injection, a monthly injection, mm-hmm. that helps with migraines.
Right.
And then my migraine medicine, I couldn't take either of those two.
Okay.
So it's just kind of when it rains, it pours.
I was curious to say, it's like a lot of things came at you at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So having my kind of mental health, kind of like mantras or techniques to help calm me down, mm-hmm. to build me up, was very important. Just having kind of like that toolbox.
Right.
And then having a support system as well.
Okay. Healthcare has a history of blaming weight as some type of moral failing on the patient. Well, you deserve a different and better approach, and that's what you'll get with Mochi. Mochi is a telehealth platform that connects patients seeking medication-based weight loss treatment with board-certified doctors and dietitians to help them determine the best treatment options to accomplish weight loss. Their program is completely virtual, meaning you can access their services anywhere in the United States. The folks at Mochi are dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care that prioritizes overall well-being. Their goal is transforming how weight management is approached. They listen, and their mission is to make their patients feel heard and understood. They work alongside their patients towards their health goals without shame or blame. They aim to make comprehensive obesity care affordable and accessible for everyone, regardless of insurance coverage. At Mochi, they believe in a weight management medicine program that's personalized to you. Science-backed medications, including GLP-1s like Ozempic, Mounjaro, and Zepbound, are just one tool in their toolbox. They also connect you with professionals to discuss other evidence-based weight loss strategies like licensed registered dietitians and MDs who are board certified in obesity medicine. Get started today at joinmochi.com and you can use the code Dr. Nicole to receive $40 off.
Oh, this is, it's so funny. All of the things that, you know, you're like, you feel something weird, like the round ligament pain, mm-hmm. and you're like, is this normal? And you Google it and they're like, oh yeah, it's normal. And be like, I've never heard of this.
Right.
This is so weird. Like, okay, well, I'll just add this to the weird things that happen in pregnancy. Yeah. So something that happened in at the end of my first trimester was I slipped and fell at work.
Okay.
So I was I worked at a childcare and I was carrying about a 6-month-old baby uh-huh. into the room and I slipped on a play scarf on the tile and I fell. I was holding baby. Uh-huh. Baby was fine.
Sure.
I fell and slipped and landed on my bottom really hard uh-huh. and kind of just rocked my body. And that really scared me. They did recommend that I went to the ER and I had, I think like one contraction and then they did an ultrasound to make sure that everything was okay.
Right.
And they did give me a shot of Rogam.
Okay.
Which I was scared of getting the Rogam in the traditional way. Uh-huh. So I had them give it to me in my arm and it's way more painful. Okay. Just get it in the normal way. The arm was so much worse.
Right.
Yeah. In the end of my second trimester, I also fell again at work.
Okay.
My boss is not happy with me. I slipped on some guacamole this time and fell. So then I had to go to labor and delivery this time.
Okay.
And I had a few contractions, but everything again was fine.
Okay.
Luckily. And then I had another shot of Rogam.
Okay.
And around in the second trimester, I noticed that my baby, and we didn't find out the gender until the end, until he was born. He was hanging out mainly on my left side, mm-hmm. super high up, just like on the left side. Mm-hmm. He rarely ever moved to the right. Mm-hmm. And I brought up that kind of concern to my nurse practitioner. And she's like, oh, you know, that could be normal. And I just tried to put it off. It was just a little weird.
Right.
At that same appointment where I brought it up, they also figured out he was breech.
Okay.
So that's when I started to try to like do all the positions of flipping him around mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I didn't really have any hope that if he was breech, that the hospital would support me trying to deliver breech.
Yeah.
Just because pretty recently or around that time, there was a birth in the news where the baby, they tried to deliver breech and the baby didn't survive.
Okay.
So yeah. I was like, I was a little scared about that.
Sure.
I didn't want that, you know, didn't want that to happen.
Okay. So it sounds like you just felt like they weren't, like, was it the nurse practitioner wasn't listening to you or the doctor wasn't listening to you or both? Were they just kind of saying, oh, this is normal, this is, you know, that kind of thing?
Yes, it was kind of just brushing off. It felt like I was being brushed off mm-hmm. and I was having a difficult time advocating for myself mm-hmm. as well. And so I finally did see my OB again at 36 weeks uh-huh. and I was just saying, you know, I'm in a lot of pain and it felt like she didn't hear me.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I'm glad that we can edit this.
Yeah.
What ended up happening was since I didn't feel heard, I just didn't want to have her as my OB
okay.
anymore.
Okay.
I didn't want to have her as my OB anymore.
Right.
I was just kind of done.
Right. Right.
If I have to convince somebody to be on my side, mm-hmm. if I have to convince somebody to be on my side, I don't want you on my team. And so I ended up, sorry.
No, take your time.
I decided to switch my OB at 37 weeks.
Okay.
And I saw this OB once, and I feel bad because I was so frustrated and upset, and I just cried
right.
for most of the appointment.
Right.
And I'm sure she was freaked out. She's like, "What is happening? Who is this? Aww. You know, this patient?"
Right.
She was great. She was understanding. But basically, oh, I forgot to mention, with my first OB, I had asked for some short-term leave disability mm-hmm. for the last part of my pregnancy.
Right.
And she did not want me to do that. And all she offered was an early induction.
Okay.
And I had told her I did not want to be induced right. earlier.
Right.
And so, again, I just felt like I wasn't being heard.
Sure. Sure.
So the new OB, she was like, she didn't want to do short-term disability, mm-hmm. which is fine. But, and I didn't want to, you know, switch my OB mm-hmm. again or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, I guess I'm just going to be, you know, uncomfortable or in pain until I deliver. Cause I didn't want to take my maternity leave early.
Right. Right.
Cause at that point at 37 weeks, I thought I was going to be pregnant for another 5 weeks.
Right. Okay.
I didn't think baby was going to come anytime soon. Okay.
Yeah. And of course they come when they come, and we'll certainly get to that part about, yes. about what happened.
Absolutely.
So I do want to ask, did either OB or the nurse practitioner offer you, or what suggestions did they offer you to manage the pain? Mm-hmm. Was there any discussion of physical therapy or maybe trying a chiropractor or any of those things?
Mm-hmm. Yes. They did suggest a chiropractor. So I was seeing a chiropractor every week.
Okay.
At this point.
Okay.
So it did, I think the chiropractor did help,
mm-hmm.
but I was still in a lot of pain. And I was, at the time I was an infant teacher okay. at a child care. And so constantly, okay. you know, standing up, sitting down with the kids, you know, that was taking a big toll on my body.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And then just like the weird position that my baby was in.
Right. Right.
In my body, just putting a lot of weird pressure
okay.
on my body.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about physical therapy? Was that ever suggested?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. That just is so hard. Were you doing anything like wearing a belly band or anything like that? Was that?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I had a belly band on all the time.
Okay.
All
right.
Yes.
Did it help?
I think it did.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
But you were still just, was it pelvic pain? It was just like, I'm just curious, like where the pain, yeah. Where were you mostly having issues with pain?
It was my lower back, and I still, like my hip joints felt like they were grinding a little bit
uh-huh.
And a little above my lower back
okay.
as well.
Okay. And just constant pain.
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. goodness. Okay. That's so tough. And then to feel like you're not being heard just adds a whole nother level of difficulty
yes.
to the situation. So then you saw the new OB, kind of made peace with that. Okay, this is, I'm going to have this new person.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happened? And you didn't want to be induced, but then what happened with your labor, birth? Let's get into that story.
Sure. Yes. So it was a Saturday. It was going to be a busy day. In the morning, we had a lactation course that we were taking.
Okay.
And then later in the day, we had a diaper keg. We were having a bunch of people over.
Uh-huh.
So the lactation course took longer than I expected.
Okay.
So when we got home, I was running around. We were getting the house set up.
Right.
I'm saying running. I was waddling,
yeah.
waddling around, telling people what to do. I'm
right.
sweating, just like trying to drag heavy things around. And so once everybody was there and we were having a good time, I lost my mucus plug
okay.
around 6 o'clock. And I was like, okay. And I went out and talked to my friend, and she's like, oh, it could be another 2 weeks.
Which is,
you know,
true.
And
it could be.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was like, okay, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And then as I was announcing the winners of the diaper keg raffle,
uh-huh.
my water broke in front of everybody in their backyard.
Okay. Like, I read that when you wrote it, but it's still hearing you say it is like, so it just, was it obvious? Just like big gush, like your clothes were just, okay. Could everybody see like what's your water just like, what happened?
Yeah. So I was wearing a long dress and it was a dark dress. So it was only, I was the only one that knew for a second. Okay. And so I was just standing there dumbfounded because I was thinking about all these other birth stories I've heard where this does not happen.
Right.
And I was looking around and so it was a lot of my husband's coworkers who he worked in the emergency room.
Okay.
And so it was a lot of nurses. And I was like, okay, I'm safe here. Where's my husband?
Right.
Luckily, it was early in the night, so he hadn't had too much beer. He was kind of sober, but he thought I was joking when I brought him over and I was like, my water broke. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. I'm like,
no,
I'm very serious.
Right.
Yes. So that was at 7:45. And the next person I told was my mother-in-law who was right there. And she's like, okay, we'll be okay. She grabbed some towels because I was waddling into our house and I was already getting contractions.
Okay.
So I was contracting and she was wiping up after me. I was hanging out in the bathroom. I called the hospital, told them it was clear.
Mm-hmm.
The fluid was clear and everything. And they're like, okay, you know, come in around in an hour if you can. So at this point I was 37 weeks. Okay. So I had my bag partially packed. I thought he wasn't going to be here until mid August.
Sure.
And this is July 8th.
Mm-hmm.
So I put on one of my postpartum diapers because I did have all that prepped.
Yeah.
And I was finished packing my bag. My husband was wondering what he should pack. So I gave him one of the books that has a list. So I was like, here, you go pack your stuff. I'm going to focus on me.
Right.
I felt very calm at this moment, which was nice. I was calm. It kind of felt like I was the eye of the hurricane with everybody kind of running around.
Right.
Around me. So I was having some contractions, and right when we were about to leave for the hospital, everybody came up and were praying for us.
Aww.
Which is sweet.
Yeah. So I'm gonna keep it real with you. Women's peak reproductive years are between late teens and late 20s. Some research indicates that an ideal first pregnancy is at age 23. Well, that just doesn't realistically line up with most people's timelines. I was barely getting started with life at 23, much less thinking about having children. And that's where Ritual comes in. Their 3-in-1 fertility support was designed in partnership with an OBGYN and a fertility specialist. And it uses clinically studied ingredients and clinically studied dosages to support conception outcomes. As an OBGYN, I trust Ritual products because they take quality seriously. Their fertility support is made traceable, received the Clean Label Project Purity Award. It's sugar-free, vegan, gluten, soy, and major allergen-free without synthetic colorants. And it has those 3 clinically studied ingredients, including myo-inositol, which helps support egg health, promotes normal ovulation cycles, helps support healthy hormone levels. NAC provides antioxidant support and helps support ovarian health. And CoQ10 helps support follicular health and cellular energy production. Now, for even more pre-pregnancy support, you can bundle the fertility support with Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin. That multivitamin has omega-3 DHA, folate, iron, and more to support key nutrient needs for preconception. So bring the fertility science back to your bedroom with 3-in-1 fertility support from Ritual. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off.
Okay, so then we arrived at the hospital at 8:45. So they knew we were coming. Some contractions, they were getting closer together, mm-hmm. but not. Actually, now that I'm remembering, it felt like about every minute I was getting a contraction.
Okay.
I didn't have an app downloaded. I didn't have my birth plan printed out. Uh-huh. So in our hospital room, we were trying to set up, and my husband was writing down my birth plan on a paper towel.
Okay. And then did they know that it was a suspicion that the baby was breech or?
No. So they thought, because they checked him at basically my 36th appointment, mm-hmm. and they said that he had flipped down.
Got it.
So okay. I think that was, I was also calm about that.
Sure. Got it. Okay.
I was like, okay, we're going to be able to do this the way that I wanted
Got it. Yes. Okay. So you get to the hospital and they're like, oh yes, obviously your water's broken. And you get settled in a room and all those things, trying to write the birth plan down. So then how did things go from there?
Sure. So they did a first check. And I don't even remember how many centimeters I was dilated. Uh-huh. I just remember it was really uncomfortable and weird. Like I just met this person. I think they were a resident,
okay.
you know, checking me. I just wanted to get off of my back.
Okay.
You know, they were trying to talk to me while I was still on the bed. And I was like, I need to get up. Like, pause what you're saying.
Right.
Give me a minute.
Right.
And then I need to stand up. So they checked me. They said I was progressing, you know, they said, get unpacked, get dressed in whatever you wanted. And then the second time that they came and checked me, that same resident was like, I think that's a foot. Like immediately she checked and was like, that's a foot. And I was like, you're joking. I was like, to her face, like, you're joking.
Right.
Like I didn't feel him move.
Right.
And I couldn't believe that from the first time that they checked,
right.
you know, 20 minutes ago,
right.
that he had flipped. And so I'm not sure if when she checked the first time, she thought that she was feeling ahead.
Okay.
And she wasn't, or I'm not sure how.
Interesting. So why did she check so close back to back? Do you know? Do you remember?
I do not remember. Okay. And it could have just been what felt to me like 20 minutes
right,
was longer.
Right. But still, okay. So she came back and then what happened? Because then that probably triggered a lot of things.
It did. So the resident felt, oh, that's a foot. So then whoever was in charge of her also checked and agreed that that was not a head that they were feeling.
Okay.
So then the hospital, or would you say like a surgical OB or who?
Yeah, or like the attending physician.
Yes.
Usually. So, Mm-hmm.
I believe the attending, she came in to talk options with us. So the options that we had were to just go in for a C-section right away
right.
or try an ECV,
uh-huh.
see if that would work.
Okay.
And she wasn't, you know, she didn't think an ECV was going to work because my water had already broken.
Yeah. And I'm thinking the same thing in my head because you have to have some space in order to turn the baby, and without the water, then there's not as much space there. I'm also surprised that they would offer it if they felt a foot, because the baby has to be tucked in yeah. so you can do the turn. I mean, obviously, I wasn't there, but do you remember how dilated you were at that point?
I was looking at my, I don't remember, and uh-huh. I was looking at the notes, and they didn't write it down, so it was
okay. Okay, so then what did you decide to do once she presented those options?
We did decide to try for the ECV.
Okay.
So that set off the, okay, now it's time for an epidural.
Okay.
It felt very quickly that they were switching to a different timeline,
mm-hmm.
you know, different, you know, set of steps. So they came in to do my epidural at 11:45
okay.
at night. So it must have been a while between getting checked.
Right.
At 11:45, they were working on my epidural, and it was taking a really long time
okay.
for my epidural. He was messing around back there for a while, and he kept saying to whoever he was with that he was having to flush and, like, push more something.
Okay.
Because he couldn't get past something, so I had to lean over even more,
uh-huh.
which is, you know, so difficult to lean over.
Sure.
And then they had to, like, push past a nerve. So it seemed like from what he was saying and whoever he was with, because I believe he was a resident,
uh-huh.
That it was taking a while because he had to tap out and somebody else had to finish it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So by the time they finished, it was just after midnight on July 9th, which was my husband's birthday.
Oh.
So he was like, cool, I'm going to have a birthday, you know, a birthday buddy. And I was like, great, good for you. Okay, I have this thing and I'm just scooping up a dural now.
Right.
So now it was time to try for the ECEV.
Okay.
And we were at a teaching hospital as well. So,
and I'm sorry, I should back up and say, I forgot to ask you, like, did you not, like, what did you want for your birth? Did you not want an epidural? Did I totally skipped over those questions because I just got like, so what did you want for your birth experience?
I did not want to have to do an epidural. Okay. My mom has a history of migraines and then she got a migraine from her epidural with my brother.
Okay.
And so I was worried about that. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to try natural labor as long as I wanted. That was in my birth plan of don't offer an epidural unless I ask for it.
Got it.
So I wanted to do that. When I was having contractions, I did feel like I was tensing up instead of letting go. Uh-huh. And I was already having trouble with that. So I was expecting that I would probably need some kind of assistance with the pain.
Right.
At the hospital we were at, you aren't allowed to labor in the tub.
Okay.
You have to get out to push.
Right.
So I was fully hoping and expecting to do that, but they might not have let me because my water had already broken.
Okay.
You know, I didn't even get to the point of talking to them about it with how fast everything went.
Okay.
So yeah, I had like my comb to push into my hand for the pain.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to be able to feel it and see what my body could do, but I wasn't, you know, able to.
And I'm guessing they may have suggested that with doing the ECV, it's an uncomfortable process. If it doesn't work, then you will probably need to go for a C-section. So then you would need some sort of anesthesia anyway. Was that part of the discussion?
Yes. She did say that if the ECV didn't work, that we would immediately go into a C-section.
Okay.
And then I remember from hearing different birth stories about how the ECVs were very uncomfortable or painful and how it was recommended to have an epidural with that.
Okay. And then I should also ask, like, what had you done to prepare for your birth? Like, what sort of childbirth, Ed? And then we'll get back to the birth story.
Right. I did the birth plan.
Okay.
That making a birth plan. Uh-huh. Which was great, loved it until I didn't print out my birth plan. So I was like, I did all of this preparation and then I thought I had, you know, 4 or 5 more weeks.
Right.
And then, so a lot of my prep didn't end up helping.
Gotcha.
We did your birth course as well, except we didn't get to finish it because we were going to finish it.
Right.
Yes. And I read Expecting Better by Emily Oster and then part of The Birth Partner as well.
Okay. So, I mean, these babies are so tricky and I say rude sometimes, like you were supposed to stay in there a little bit longer, but things happen when they happen.
Yes.
Okay. So, all right. So getting back to the story. So you got the epidural and then like, how did it go with the ECV?
Yes. So I laid on my back and all of these people came in. It felt like our room was full. You know, there were about 10, 15 people in there because there were students.
Okay.
It felt like, you know, people wanted to watch the ECV happen.
Right.
So my husband was on my left side and I was just looking at him, holding his hand while he's watching. And he said it was just like the weirdest thing when they were pushing him around because they moved him, you know, because you could see everything because my water had broken.
Okay.
So you could see the shape of the baby.
Right.
But then once they got him in position, he rotated back.
Okay.
So they did that twice. His heart didn't like it.
Okay.
And they're like, okay, we're done. We're going.
Right.
So the OB left, I'm sure, to scrub in.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay, wow, getting a C-section. And just over and over in my head, I'm thinking, I don't want a C-section. I don't want a C-section. And I said it out loud. And the nurse was like, oh, well, this hospital has a really good rate of VBACs. And I was like, this baby's still inside.
Yeah, like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Are you talking about another baby?
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, I know she just was trying to find something to say.
Yeah.
But that is not what I needed to hear.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know if you know, because of his heart rate dipping a little bit mm-hmm. and wanting to go to a C-section, because they never brought up offering for a breech mm-hmm. delivery.
Yeah, because most people don't do it. That's just mm-hmm. it's not something that we're trained in sure. these days, especially. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on the way to the C-section, because I was laying on my back, I was still really uncomfortable. Uh-huh. And I did just push my epidural button once.
Okay.
So I just pushed it once. But on the way, I started losing sensation, like that tingling uh-huh. sensation. It was getting higher and higher and higher,
right.
like up to my chest.
Right.
And so this is like the traumatic part.
Okay.
For me yeah. was I could not breathe. Mm-hmm. My husband wasn't there. He wasn't allowed in yet.
Okay.
And I just felt like I couldn't breathe. I had a nurse holding my hand on one side. Uh-huh. And I just felt like all of these people were just staring at me while I couldn't breathe. And
Were you saying that you can't breathe?
Yes, okay. I was. I was saying I couldn't breathe and I was trying to wave my other hand around to try to clear. It felt like I needed a claw at my throat. Uh-huh. And the only things people were saying was, don't touch your belly, you know, don't touch anything. And in my brain, I'm like, of course, I'm not trying to touch my belly. Right. I can't. I feel like I'm drowning.
Right.
And nobody's helping me. So that was one of my questions for you is, why do you think they weren't like coaching me or?
Yeah, that is, oh my gosh. Okay. That is so difficult. So it sounds like, I mean, and you were saying like, I feel like yes. I can't breathe and there. Yeah. So what can happen with anesthesia is that the level can go mm-hmm. higher and higher. And it actually, even though you are breathing, a person can certainly feel as if they are not. And it's very terrifying mm-hmm. because you feel like you can't breathe, even though you know, you're not paralyzed. Mm-hmm. It's just that you can't feel that you're breathing. So in those instances, we really have to provide a lot of reassurance that, hey, I know it feels like you can't breathe, but I'm watching your oxygen level. Like the anesthesiologist should be doing, the nurses should be doing a lot of mm-hmm. as things are moving around, especially the anesthesiologist. Ideally, we'd be saying, you know, I can see your oxygen level is normal. I know it feels like you can't breathe. In some instances, we even have to give people anxiety medication, mm-hmm. maybe a tiny bit just to help, or sit people up a little bit because to help the medicine kind of come down. So what you're just, I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but from what you're describing, it sounds like the level was just going higher and that can, what you're feeling is a normal mm-hmm. response to that. What you felt is a normal response to that. Yeah. And we have to help manage mm-hmm. manage that.
Yes. Yeah. So I didn't feel like I had any support or coaching mm-hmm. or hearing, you know, here's your oxygen level. Mm-hmm. That would have helped me
right.
to see that.
Right.
And so, yeah, the last thing that I remember was just the oxygen mask being, you know, put on my face.
Right.
So they did have to intubate me. On my chart, they said it was unclear if this sensation was due to a high spinal uh-huh. versus a panic attack.
Okay. The high spinal is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand though why. I mean, we don't typically have to necessarily intubate someone unless you really aren't breathing. Like if it's so high that, you know, things stop, but did they say, okay, we're going to have to intubate you. Do you remember any of that? Sometimes they give you medicine to that helps people forget what happened, but obviously you remember it up until then. So
yes, I remember up until that point. Mm-hmm. They didn't say anything. If they had said, okay, we need to work on your breathing.
Right.
Or you're going to need to be intubated for your
sure.
safety. That would have helped me.
Right.
That would have been a goal,
right.
you know, to work on, but nope.
Okay.
Nothing.
So then you were completely,
asleep for the surgery. So then what is the next thing you remember after? And then your husband couldn't be in there either.
Nope. He was, he was outside. He had just gotten all scrubbed up and they had told him, you know, she needs to be intubated. So you're not going to be able to be in the delivery room. Mm-hmm. A nurse did take my phone. So we have pictures.
Okay.
Which is good. So yes, I woke up in the recovery room and, Steve was holding our baby all wrapped up, all snuggled tight. And he had told them he didn't want to know until I did, you know, boy or girl,
right.
Which is so sweet.
That is really sweet. Yeah, that is really sweet.
Caspian was born at 1:24 and then I was awake at 2:01 in the morning.
Okay. I mean, what was that like for? I mean, was it like surreal? Like what was that like for you?
It was very surreal. You know, I've never really had to have a major surgery before. And waking up, I didn't really remember or think about what had just happened, you know, in the OR.
Right.
I just was like pushed online again. There's my husband. Oh my gosh, he's holding my baby. My baby's not in my belly anymore. Right. You know, and just being loopy from the medicine.
Right.
Because when I first saw our son, I was like, oh my gosh, like you used to be in my belly.
Right.
Like I was still, I think, a little bit high from the, from the medicine. Yeah, we unwrapped him, just, you know, the best present. And had to see our little baby boy, who shares my husband's birthday.
Yep.
So that was really great.
Okay.
So while we were in that first room before you go back to your regular room, the operating OB came in and she said that she had noticed that my uterus was differently shaped.
Okay.
And so she had drawn what it had looked like on like a paper towel.
Right.
And I was like, okay, thank you. That's very nice. There's a baby
right
here. I'm going to focus on this
again. Right.
I don't care about babies in the future right now.
Right.
There's a baby right here. But so that was that's a different part of my story. But we also found out that Caspian had his nuchal cord wrapped around his neck 4 times.
Okay.
So while I am upset, you've talked about this too.
Mm-hmm.
You can have mixed feelings about
Absolutely.
Your delivery.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so relieved he's okay.
Yeah.
While also extremely angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
About what happened.
Yeah. Totally understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the cord can be wrapped around the neck for a vaginal birth, but 4 times, I don't know that would be a challenging labor. Babies wouldn't, I can't say that I've ever seen a baby come out vaginally with a cord wrapped around their neck 4 times. So I'm glad that he got here safely as well. So then do you remember any discussion, whether that day or later, about how you had to go to sleep or any discussion about like that part?
No, nobody came and discussed that with me. And so that was also why I was so angry that they put in my file that they weren't sure if the sensation of not breathing was a high spinal or panic attack.
Right.
Especially because it felt like, from my perspective, that they're just trying to cover themselves, you know, legally.
Mm-hmm.
Early July is when new residents come on at our hospital.
Right.
And so I just would have loved for somebody to talk to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to talk through things and
to talk about it.
Yeah. And about what happened. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Yeah. This is just, I mean, obviously this is your story, but I personally am learning so much about how important it is for us to just circle back and acknowledge what happened and offer the opportunity to answer questions, whether it's right then or whether it's a couple weeks later or both, you know, because it can make just a huge difference in how the experience is perceived and processed, or, you know, just acknowledging that it's some trauma involved in that I don't think we understand and recognize enough. We have a lot of focus on like
the baby's safe and mom is safe physically, but maybe not so much mentally in terms of how things transpired.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm still processing it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, I'm still processing it 15 months later.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then how was the postpartum period like in terms of like breastfeeding and things like that? Recovery from the C-section?
Yes. So after the C-section, I was super nauseous. And I felt bad every time the lactation consultant came in the hospital. She'd be like, how are you? And I'd say, I'm great. And then I would kind of throw up everywhere.
Oh, God. Bless your heart. Okay.
I feel bad for her. Right. She's like, okay, like, what is it about me that's making this happen? Yes, I wanted to breastfeed. So I worked with the lactation consultants at the hospital. And then our hospital also offers a free weekly like breastfeeding support.
Okay.
So I went to that because he was having trouble latching. We had to use syringes to feed him.
Okay.
So I would have to, pump after trying to feed him.
Right.
We really got into like a good relationship with breastfeeding because of MilkWorks in Omaha. It's a nonprofit lactation support. And they are amazing. You can, they do weighted feeds, you know, you can meet with IVCLCs and they were really wonderful with that. But because of my history with depression and anxiety, I was fully prepared and expecting to have postpartum depression.
Okay.
So just being, I listened to a lot of birth stories where women had talked about that just so that I was aware and ready to recognize those symptoms.
Right.
And so what I had done was set up therapy appointments afterwards.
Okay.
I had set one up for like right at 40 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So to talk about, you know, oh, I'm going to deliver. Oh, surprise. Surprise. Here's my baby. You know, the telehealth appointment.
Right.
But having those already set up really helped hold me accountable for myself, to not try to push my mental health to the side.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then did it, which is like what everyone should do. You have to do some preparing for postpartum while you're still pregnant. So I hope you give yourself credit for that. Cause that's really huge. Cause you know, mom being in the best shape that she can be is so important for the health of the baby as well. So that's really wonderful.
Absolutely.
And then did you ever think, what were your thoughts about ever either during pregnancy or either postpartum? What were your thoughts around when or if to restart your medication?
Yes. So I've always thought about my anxiety and depression, not as something to be cured.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of like a roller coaster. So sometimes when you're really low, you need more support to get back up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just going to be open to needing medicine.
Right.
With taking antidepressants that can be transferred through breast milk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just had to be ready and accept that a fed baby with a happy mom is the best.
Yes.
But luckily with breastfeeding, that helps support those extra like hormones that get released during breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Those have helped me so that I was able to breastfeed him for 13 months.
Okay.
And then we kind of mutually decided that we were done.
Okay.
Well, once he started having teeth, I was like, I'm good. I'm all done with this. yes.
Okay, good. Well, how was your physical recovery from having surgery?
It was difficult. I felt like I had some nerve damage at like the left side of my incision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of trying to describe what that incision feels like because there's so many layers that they go through that you just feel very like vulnerable in your body.
Right.
You know, just being patient with yourself. I was very strict of not lifting heavy things, not trying to push myself too early to harm my recovery.
Right.
But yeah, it was difficult. Steve would have to pick up Caspian from the bassinet, like when we were at night in bed, because I couldn't lift him.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a whole nother Another beast.
Challenging. Whole other challenge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when did you go back and see your OB afterwards? Was it not until 6 weeks?
I believe, yes, it was 6 weeks.
And was it a different person, I presume, than, or was it the same person?
It was the second OB.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. But not the one.
So the second one.
Was she also the one who did your surgery?
No, she was not.
Okay.
No, she was not on call.
Got it.
So it was somebody else.
Okay. So then did she bring up anything about how, you know, what happened and how you were feeling and things like that?
She asked about my support at home, just to make sure that I was with supportive people and things like that. And I think because I'm an emotional person, that can worry people,
right?
When I don't have a long relationship with them, where they're like, okay, this lady's crying and I'm like concerned about her. But so she was just making sure that I had good support at home. She did talk about next steps of figuring out what was going on with the shape of my uterus.
Okay.
So she wanted to first do an ultrasound, just because that is less expensive than an MRI.
Right.
So we did do an ultrasound a few months later.
Okay.
And they weren't able to tell what was going on.
Okay.
So then I did have to do an MRI in November.
Uh-huh.
And seeing the MRI is wild because you can still see from July to November, you could see where my C-section was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very clear. Like, it did not look healed, you know? And so anybody that's like, wow, my body's not bouncing back, this still really hurts. Like, they slice through a lot of stuff.
Right.
So just giving yourself grace is important.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we put folks back together, but it's not exactly going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be the same. So, and it takes some time to heal. So then what did they find with your MRI?
Yeah. It's and tell me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, but a bicornuate.
Yes.
Bicornuate.
Uterus. Yeah.
Uterus. Uh-huh. Yes. With a rudimentary horn on the right side.
Okay.
So basically I have a studio apartment size uterus on the left, and then the right side is like a detached tool shed.
That's a great way to put it. So yeah, and it's hard to explain how it happens, but when we're all developing in our own mothers, the uterus starts as two pieces that fuses together, and if it doesn't fuse all the way together, then it can end with what happened with you. And sometimes we don't suspect it. You can't necessarily feel it, so it may not. It's often going to be discovered in the setting of pregnancy, although often it can be seen on ultrasound during pregnancy. But maybe how it was shaped, they just didn't quite see it. But obviously, she saw something was going on when she was looking at your belly.
Yeah.
So it's not a common thing, but it does happen, and it's probably why the baby was breached, because they just don't have as much space necessarily to turn around.
Yeah, he definitely ran out of room in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, how are you? I mean, as we wrap up, so how are you feeling about things overall?
Overall, I'm grateful, you know, that Caspian is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, you can hear my voice and see in my face, I'm still hurting.
Right. Yeah. And how are you? Are you still continuing to see your therapist or psychiatrist or both?
Yes, I am. I'm still seeing my therapist. And it is interesting how after stopping breastfeeding, I am seeing that going back on medication will probably be an inevitability, which is absolutely fine.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, there's this, but that definitely is something to watch and be aware of.
Uh-huh.
Just for people, it is, you know, the amount of hormones that do get released during breastfeeding is huge. And so that drop off is surprising, you know, just there's always a new part of the journey, you know, that you're going through.
Definitely. So then what is your one piece of like your favorite thing, the one thing that you want people to absolutely take away and know from your story, one piece of advice?
Yeah. I would say, you know, trust yourself. Mm-hmm. Always just take a deep breath, slow down, and be kind to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent advice. Excellent advice. Well, where can people connect with you? You can say nowhere or.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Instagram would probably be the best place. Okay. I have a private Instagram, but if somebody, you know, wants to send me a DM, that's fine. It's Mrs._Rachel_Romero.
Okay. And we will link that in the show notes.
And thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, thank you.
For all of us.
Thank you. And again, I really appreciate you coming on to share your story. I mean this when I say I have learned a lot and things that will help me be a better doctor. And I know that everybody who's listening will have learned a lot too. And just, I appreciate your vulnerability and your honesty for sharing today.
I appreciate your patience with my tears.
Oh, as I told you, I'm a crier. I can cry at an emotional commercial. So I am totally like somebody who can, so I can relate in that regard. Yeah. So I no worries on that. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Wasn't that a lot? I so appreciate Rachel coming on to share her story. There's so much to learn from it. And after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top takeaways from the conversation. And I have quite a few takeaways from my conversation with Rachel. Number one, deciding whether or not to keep taking anxiety or depression medications is really a personal decision. Both options are perfectly acceptable, reasonable, right, depending on your own unique circumstances. What you need is what Rachel had, and that is a psychiatrist who can present a balanced view of staying or not staying on the medications based on your unique circumstances. But really, either choice is the right choice, depending on your own unique situation. Okay, number two is that pain during pregnancy is common, but we really don't want it to be normal. A lot of times we have kind of normalized pain during pregnancy. Oh, that's normal, that's normal, that's normal. And really instead, what we should say, it's common, but we should work on some strategies to help people manage pain. So whether that is doing things like exercise, it's counterintuitive, but actually movement can help with pain. So whether that's exercise, like prenatal yoga, there are tons of free videos on YouTube. Whether you need to see a physical therapist or a pelvic physical therapist in particular, maybe you even want to explore seeing a chiropractor for a few visits. All of those things are perfectly reasonable options and things you should explore. You don't have to accept pregnancy pain being normal, even though it is common. All right, so I also want to talk about what to do when your water breaks. And obviously, you should do what your doctor says based on your unique circumstances, because that's going to vary. But in general, if you are full term and your water breaks, if the water's clear and not bloody, then you don't necessarily have to rush to come to the hospital. You want to come sooner if you have GBS, the group beta strep bacteria, so that you can get the antibiotics started to treat that. But if you don't, then you don't have to rush to the hospital. I would tell people you can wait 6 hours to come to the hospital, or if labor starts, whichever comes first. Some people will say longer. Some practices will say, and usually I say midwifery practices, will say even up to 24 hours before you come in if your water breaks. Now, if the baby is breached, that's a bit of a different story. If the baby is breech and you know the baby to be breech, if the baby is footling breech, meaning the feet are coming first, that's a situation where the cord can drop down in front of the feet. That is a true emergency. So if your water breaks and you're breech, and if you're footling breech, then you definitely want to head on into the hospital. If the baby is frank breech, where the butt is just sitting down, it's not as much of a rush. But again, if the baby's breech, you want to head on into the hospital. We know that there are challenges with breech vaginal birth. Most physicians actually these days don't know how to do breech vaginal birth. That is something that I think some practices, especially in academic centers, are starting to bring back and more people have an interest in. Right now, though, most people are going to do a breech
birth as a cesarean birth. And this is from a study that came out a while ago. It has some flaws to it. But right now, the recommendation is probably going to be a cesarean birth. In episode 153 of the podcast, that's drnicolerankins.com/episode153. You can go into all the details about breech birth and how it's managed. But in general, if you have a breech baby, when your water breaks, just head on and head on into the hospital. But otherwise, if you're full term, fluid is clear, you don't necessarily have to rush in. Okay. Next couple things I want to say is if you are in a place like where Rachel was, where you are in an academic center, where you have residents are physicians who are in training and medical students are in medical school, then go ahead and grab my free guide on questions to ask when working with medical students. We all at some point are learners. I was a medical student at some point. I was a resident at some point, and I appreciated people giving me the opportunity to learn to be an OBGYN with them. But you want to have some clarity about how that is going to work for you. So head to drnicolerankins.com/resources, scroll down and you'll see the guide. It's a guide for questions to ask again if you're in a situation where you're working with residents and medical students. It'll just help bring some clarity and some peace of mind about that situation. And then the last thing I want to say is, if you have birth trauma, if you have a birth where things did not go the way that you intended, do take some time to process that trauma. Even if you and your baby ended up being well, that does not mean that maybe there wasn't a traumatic situation for you. And you are the only one who decides and can make that decision about whether or not something is traumatic. If you have birth trauma, if you are having feelings and things about your birth experience, and do take some time to process it, ideally with a licensed professional. In episode 262 of the podcast, that's drnicolerankins.com/episode262, I have a great conversation about birth trauma with a licensed clinical social worker and birth trauma survivor, Kaylee Summer. So do check that out for some information about processing birth trauma. Okay, so there you have it. Do share this podcast with a friend. Also, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to me right now. And I would so appreciate it if you leave a review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps the show to grow. It helps me to reach and serve more pregnant folks. So just take a minute, hit those stars, leave a little couple words about what you think. I really, really appreciate it. And it helps me so, 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 so much. Also, do come make sure you check out my live birth plan class and stay at the end for the live office hours Q&A. You can sign up for the next class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. So that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Just corn below, so every time you go, you'll know your shh don't stink.
World's best cat litter for the world's best cat.